He's your voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning. Now on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Well, there's a lot of interesting health news. Where to begin? How about a new study? Hi, how are you, Dr. Brown?
I'm well. There is a lot of interesting things. I'm wondering where we're going to go today.
I know, right? Well, if you have anything that you want to talk about, lay it on me. I wanted to start by talking about something that's very popular, which I think is interesting when you hear about certain diets and what it can do for weight loss, things like that. But there's a new study showing the Mediterranean diet actually lowers the risk of getting a stroke for women. Did you see this?
I did. And it's interesting because I think this is one of those studies that has probably has strengthened that finding. So interesting enough, we do know that the Mediterranean diet does reduce cholesterol. And because of that, we actually, and cholesterol is directly related to, cardiovascular, neurovascular issues. And a stroke is a neurovascular issue. So much like the heart, where we end up getting plaques that are there that lead to a heart attack, a stroke is a brain attack, essentially, where you end up having vessels that end up getting these plaques in them. And those plaques continue to form, to form dams within the brain. And then there's a decreased blood flow. That's essentially what a stroke is. A stroke is that acutely happens. So eventually it just closes up. So any reduction in cholesterol or maintaining flow, which is also really important, so total amount of fats or lipids that are in the blood, will definitely help prevent strokes, heart attacks, et cetera.
Well, and it's interesting, as you mentioned before, Dr. Brown. So the Mediterranean diet is super heavy on plant-based foods. If you're, healthy fats, fish, for example, minimal red meat a lot of the time. But it's one of the diets I feel like that has consistently gotten praise, I should say. Because, you have some of those, like the keto diet, for example, that's very effective. But then there's the question of if you're on it long term, does it kind of build up and is bad for the arteries of your heart? And again, I'm not trying to pick one or the other. But I feel like Mediterranean diet has always kind of like flown under the radar, as far as I've never seen anything about it that was, oh, my gosh, so troubling, don't ever do it kind of a thing. And it's interesting because it's one of the only consistent diets I feel like has kind of been that way. But to your point earlier, now we're seeing more and more studies that are proving it to have, to avoid a stroke, to lower your risk by 18%. That's a big deal.
Right. And it's interesting because I think, and I know there's probably a lot of confusion about diets out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think patients and individuals need to be aware of sort of what genetic predisposition they have. So what is your family risk? What are the issues that you potentially have that occur? And I think modify your diet based on that. A keto diet is not for everyone, and Mediterranean diet is not for everyone. If you don't have a particular concern, or if there's not a particular family history of in particular high cholesterol, then focusing on a balanced diet is really important. And balanced diet, I think, makes just common sense. Being able to understand what you're doing and, taking things in moderation is probably the best way to go.
So it's interesting, as we talk about the food that we eat and the impact it has. We have Dr. Brown here. A registered dietitian is emphasizing the importance of eating breakfast. So you always hear breakfast is the most important meal of the day. But this new study says that people should eat within 2 hours of waking up, or else it may be hard to concentrate and it could lead to overeating later in the day. And what I find fascinating about this is, whether people agree with him politically or not, Governor Lamont had said he wanted free breakfast for all students across Connecticut. It's something he's proposing right now during the legislative session. There was a question about why isn't he including lunch on that? Also, the quality of the food that they're eating, that does certainly matter. And I want to get your take on that, Dr. Brown. But, studies like this, I think, speak to exactly why you need to make sure kids are eating. I mean, to have no concentration means that you're just not going to have a very productive day at school, let alone potentially overeating and overindulging later on in the day.
Right, absolutely. And it does definitely come down to sort of balancing. And this is just another balancing act. And we know the people who have severe diabetes, so they can't control their sugar in their blood.
Mm-hmm.
We know if they have severe diabetes, our recommendation to them is that they eat, instead of 3 meals a day, they eat 5 meals a day.
Mm-hmm.
small,
right?
You know, not like a medieval feast, but I mean, small, you know, and monitoring and able to monitor, you know, blood sugars while they go, and that we know is really good for our system. So the more that we can actually get a balance or a homeostasis, a kind of this equilibrium in our body, the better we are. So yes, so skipping meals, eating once a day, eating, you know, trying to avoid meals is probably not in our best interest. The issue is that what do we eat? And again, it's can be very confusing because there's just some. So I'll tell you one of the things that I just read. There is there's some reiterating data related to oatmeal and eating oatmeal in the morning, how that can actually help reduce cholesterol.
Oh, interesting. Really?
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know if I love that because I'm not a huge oatmeal fan, but my husband will love that you just said that.
which is interesting because that's not really keto.
Right. That's so true. So, I mean, what do we always say, Dr. Brown? Consult your doctor. Isn't that always what you should do before you do any diet or supplement or anything
exactly.
You do, right?
That's exactly.
What if you,
I would tell you, and again, I will tell you my bias is plant-based, focusing more on plants and, you know, things that are local. I mean, you can't really go wrong with that. That really is sort of the thing that makes the most sense. You know, little meals, snacking on vegetables and fruits is really probably the best way to go. You know, you do get people have got this misunderstanding that protein doesn't come from plant-based, but it does, and it doesn't need to be highly processed. Protein is in a lot of different things, including even things like spinach. So.
Well, I think it's, again, it also speaks to, you know, why I think it's important that people are asking the questions. Going back to Connecticut's proposal for free breakfast for everybody, I don't hate the idea. I think it's great that kids are eating before they go into their school day, certainly, but I think the quality of what those kids are eating matters.
Sure. We don't want those to be donuts.
No, you really don't. That's what I mean. You could say on the surface, yeah, we need to give free breakfast, but what exactly are you giving these kids?
Exactly.
I think that matters too.
Wait for 5 minutes and then they're going to be sleeping because they're going to get the sugar rush.
There
so,
you
yes,
go. Yeah, and those poor teachers. They don't need that. They don't need that. We've got Dr. Fred Brown here of Griffin Health, our peace of mind in the medical field, talking about some of the top health news. That certainly has an implication for us here in Connecticut. So, Dr. Brown, the FDA is agreeing to review Moderna's influenza vaccine. Already a lot of controversy around the flu shot. Officials defending the initial decision, saying the company should have given a higher strength vaccine to older patients in the control arm of its trial. However, Moderna made revisions to its approach and is now seeking full approval for the shot for adults between ages 50 and 64 years old, as well as accelerated approval for those ages 65 and up. So I know they're supposed to make a decision on this, I believe, by August. But what are your thoughts on this? Let's dive into this one.
Yeah, this one's actually is really interesting, and it's interesting from sort of my standpoint. Well, I mean, the first thing is that this isn't the holy grail of flu shots. It's not a once and done flu shot. Unfortunately, we haven't got there yet. But again, I think this is definitely a positive move. So if you know, just to remind people what an mRNA does. So what it does is it actually encodes outside of the important, you know, nucleus of the cell, so not in the brain center of the cell, but actually in the periphery, what we call the cytoplasm. What it does is it actually sends in a code. That code then codes for a protein, and that protein is then exposed by our own cells to our immune system, and then our immune system responds to it. So this is actually really good, and this can be modified very quickly. It can be developed very quickly to the point where we may be able to say in the future with these mRNA vaccines that instead of worrying about having a flu season that's not, you know, let's say the flu season is an aggressive flu season, we're not finding that our flu shot is as effective. The mRNA vaccine can be switched pretty quickly to allow for that modification. So you could even see an interseason change when this vaccine comes out. So again, it's not the holy grail, which again is the one flu shot and we don't have to worry about it again. And we can talk about that in another reason why that's not the case. But it does allow us to have quick, rapid changes to allow us to respond to the flu and have a good response, which could be pretty straightforward and hopefully keep us away from these bad flu season like we saw this year.
Well, and so I kind of wanted to dive into that, though, Dr. Brown, because I think sometimes there's misconception, and this is not me telling people they should or should not get a flu shot, but it's more of, I think, understanding the flu shot, because correct me if I'm wrong, we don't know what next year's flu strain is going to be. And I think one of the biggest problems we had with this one was a strain that we had not really seen before, at least not in a long time. So it didn't really matter what kind of a strain you put in the flu vaccine last year. There is no effective way, essentially, is what I'm getting at, to get the exact strain correct, you know, before the season happens. However, why the flu vaccine is effective is that it lowers your chance of getting really sick to the point that you end up in a hospital bed. Correct? Am I on the right path with saying that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there's a couple nuances. So yes, one is that the limitation in the what we're going to have in next year's flu shot, because we're almost done with this flu season, hopefully, what we're going to have in next year is limited by manufacturing. So we have to have there needs to be a certain time frame. So there needs to be a cutoff to say, okay, you know, this is the strain they're seeing, interesting enough, in like Australia, because usually Australia's strain is our next year's strain. Just like our strain now is Australia's strain. So they'll actually go ahead and we'll look at that, say where it is, but then there's a time frame in which we have to get that set up. And you can imagine that it could take a considerable amount of time to get that set up. So that becomes the first thing. The second thing is that when you get the flu shot, you're getting a series of proteins. So what's happening is that you're getting injected with proteins. Your body's job is to go into that area that just got injected and then develop antibodies to those proteins. And then in turn, will prevent you from getting a bad case of the flu, because it's really that exposure that's there. If those proteins aren't picked up as well, if those proteins aren't the proteins that are this year's flu shot, or the flu is actually mutated, then you'll still get sick from it. The question is did this year? Now we did have a bad flu year, but it was quick. I mean, you know how fast this went. We ended up seeing it. People got sick. Everybody had the flu for like several weeks, and then now it's gone. We're not even seeing it anymore.
Right.
So it's pretty impressive. Now, you know, I could if I really wanted to put that together and be Pollyannish and say, yeah, well, that's because of the flu. That's because of the flu vaccine. You know what? We got it. We had it. It was gone. Everyone else was sort of already vaccinated. It just sort of died out really quickly. That's a possibility, or this is just the type of strain it was.
Mm. I mean, but part of it too, Dr. Brown, and I know this is where kind of controversy comes, is, you know, the idea of allowing your kids to be exposed to that type of a strain. I mean, so if your kid got the flu this year but didn't have the flu vaccine, is it kind of like where COVID, I remember with COVID, if you had COVID, it was almost as strong because you basically were exposed to it as if you had gotten the vaccine. Now, of course, I got the COVID vaccine, but wasn't that, you know, and again, I know they're different things, but is that, you know, I guess a good protection going into next year's strain, whatever that may be, or no, you still would recommend the flu vaccine?
So that's a really good question. And I will give you the short answer to the long answer. The short answer is that because your body never gets exposed to the internal workings of the flu itself, at least when it attaches to cause an infection, that doesn't really matter as much. So what I'm saying is that, you know, it's the external components of the flu virus that are the biggest issue. And they change so frequently that if you don't get the flu vaccine, there's no way that you've had exposure to that strain that's coming this year. However, so being, you know, focusing on the previous year will convey some immunity to it. Now there's also, so that being said, there's also your immune system has a long lasting memory. And when it comes to the flu, that long-lasting memory prevents you from getting sick or as sick in the future.
Mm.
So there is a cumulative effect of getting the flu vaccine. As you get the flu vaccine, your body's now seen this protein and has the ability to respond to it. So really quickly, the 1918 outbreak, which was probably the worst flu outbreak we've seen this, last century, in the 1900s, probably anyone who's sort of living, 1918 outbreak, we found that the 1918 outbreak affected those people who were mid-20s and younger, maybe a little bit older, but mid-20s and youngers were the most affected, had the highest mortality, and were in turn, the biggest component of that disaster that wiped out, almost a third of the population. I mean, it was a huge number of people who actually died during that epidemic. Those who were actually older than 30 got the flu and had minor problems with it, or didn't get it at all because they had immunity, because they found that about 50 years earlier, or 30 years earlier, there was a similar virus that was there and they had immunity.
Oh, that is interesting. Huh. Wow. Well, this is where history is very helpful. Well, there's a lot of ways that history is helpful, but that's fascinating. Dr. Brown, I appreciate you even having the beginning of this conversation. As you mentioned, we could do a much deeper dive into this, but I appreciate just starting it here on WICC. Thank you so much always for being on the show, and we'll talk again next week.